Promotion Man, the true backstories of the most iconic bands in the world, told by Fred Myers and interviewed by me, L.A. Lloyd. Get involved and interact on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You'll find the links at promotion-man.com. That's promotion-man.com. Download the weekly Promotion Man podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your favorite podcast provider.
You have no idea how nervous I am about this. I'm going to be terrible.
Oh, my gosh. Like, you've never been in a recording studio or, you've got this. By the way, thank you, because we've been talking about getting you on this for... We've been doing this
over
for about
a year.
Yeah. And we keep thinking, who are our friends that we love and who's got good stories? And so we've been wanting to get you on. Ray Vaughn's just like avoiding us like the plague.
Well, you know what, Fred? When we talked Monday, I hung up the phone and I said, damn it. He's really a good promo rep, because he did not give me a chance to say no.
Well, and did you get the Valium that I sent you? I sent you some Valium.
No, but I'm still available to take it.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because this morning I had to go to the dentist, right? And the very first thing I tell them when I get in is, I'm pretty sure I'm going to need some drugs.
Yeah.
And they know me enough that they all start laughing. But I'm going, no, I mean it. I'm not even kidding around this time. I need some good drugs.
What's his name again? Dr. Mushroom?
No, that was last week. So, Patty, we started getting into the radio show, which is a completely different animal. It gives us a chance to, you know, play the snippets of songs or full songs. And with you being in... You were with A&M for a while, and then you were with MCA for a long time. We know that you've probably got so many stories, and I was hoping, and we can do another version of this, because you're going to be great, and when we send it to you, you're going to go, wow, that wasn't so bad. And then we could do like Patty Martin Volume 2 or Part 2.
Oh, Lord. Listen, you should have called me before I lost my memory.
Oh, tell Lloyd what June Colbert said to you.
Oh, God. I'm scared.
Can you remember?
Oh, no, that was what Bebop said.
Oh, Bebop. That's right. So what did Bebop?
Yeah. Oh, I was talking to Bebop one day. I said, Bebop, remember the time? And I got that far. She goes, oh, Patty, let me stop you right there. I don't remember the 80s.
Nor the 90s, so it's all big fog.
So I've had an opportunity to be around you for years, and we've shared plenty of stories. And I was telling Lloyd yesterday that Jerry Barrett at Warner Brothers, who was my counterpart for Dallas when I was the Warner Brothers Houston rep, was somebody that you really looked up to, and you had asked him at one point if he thought you could get into the promotion business with a record label. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
And he said to you what?
Oh, Patty, girls don't do this.
Oh, boy.
And how many years have you been doing it now?
41.
Wow.
So.
And she's only 39, so you do the math.
No, Jerry was really the first promotion rep I ever met when I was in retail in Mobile, Alabama. And I have never been more fascinated in my life, but he was just such a great guy. And he was actually responsible for me getting out of retail and getting my one and only job in radio that lasted a whole year. But that was, I told him when I accepted the job, I said, well, sure, I'll come and work for you, but what I really want to do is record promotion. And the general manager and the consultant laughed at me and said, you don't want to be a record gig.
Oh, man.
I said, yeah, I think that's my calling. I think that's what I want to do. So
at this
here
point,
we are.
At this point, it was kind of the good old boys club, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it really was. It was. My first job was in New Orleans, and I was the only female rep. And And then for, you know, for a long time, June and I were the only two female reps in the state, in Houston, after I moved over here.
Right. So
not Houston, the whole state of Texas.
So your first job was in New Orleans, and you're still here to talk about it. I am impressed. You are a promotion person.
She is. Hey, did anybody introduce her, by the way?
Oh, sorry. Patty Martin. Patty Martin, promotion person extraordinaire.
Her bowling shirt says Patty Boom Boom Martin.
Just wow.
I don't know about all that. I've lost some weight since those Boom Boom days, Fred.
I've been drinking with Patty. She Boom Boom me a couple of times, I can tell you that.
What?
Oh, I'm sure it was. Well,
like shots, not Boom Boom, yeah. But come on.
Oh, I thought blow.
You guys,
I immediately thought,
not that either.
I immediately went to the blow thing.
Well, of course you do.
All right, so Patty, give us story number one. What do you got?
Well, there were a few. Some are just like, well, let's start with the Tom Petty story.
Yeah, Tom Petty, that'll be a good one.
This is when I was still in New Orleans, and, they had been on ABC Records, and then MCA bought ABC. So Tom was not completely delighted to be on MCA, and they kind of used me to do little errands for them. I took Stan Lynch shopping for a travel bag, and later that afternoon they said, "Will you take us to a record store?" I said, "Sure." So I loaded all of the Heartbreakers. Tom did not come to this part, but I loaded the Heartbreakers into my Trans Am.
Awesome.
That had been wrecked, and I was so new to the game. I didn't really know the ins and outs, but I drove them out to this great record store called Leisure Landing, and they piled out and they went in and just started. They started piling up cassettes, and it grew bigger and bigger. It was like a little wall of cassettes, and I'm just waiting to shuffle them back to the hotel. And then the owner of the record store comes over and goes, "Here, Patty, I need you to sign for these."
Oh.
And I'm freaking out because I make no money. And I thought, I have to pay for all these? So I signed my name and started having palpitations. I mean, shortness of breath. I drove them back to their hotel, said goodbye, and I immediately went and found a phone and called one of my bosses in Los Angeles. And I was like, "Rob, I don't know what to do. I'm going to have to pay for like a million cassettes for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers." I was crying, and he said, "Patty, shut up." He said, "We'll just charge that against royalties. Don't worry about it." So,
and here's the thing about the music business. There was what was notoriously called the promotion-only copy, which
right.
isn't for sale, and it says so. And that's what Patty and me and any record label rep used to give to radio, press, and whomever. And then you have what we call cleans. And a clean is the real record that you find in a record store that has no markings, and it is a clean.
Right.
So a lot of times what they'll do is just send them a few boxes of albums that's selling like crazy so they can get their money back, if you will.
Yeah.
Right, Patty?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because now you know.
Because now I know.
Oh, Patty knows all the ins and outs now.
So when you were with A&M Records, you happened to be with a very famous boss in the industry.
Oh, yes.
But then they even did a documentary about him because of the way that he had lost his life.
I mean, can right. we say that this guy is the number one promotion man of all time? I mean, you guys have been in the business together. Would you say he is the all-time number one promotion man?
Yes. Yeah. No doubt. In fact,
tell us who we're talking about first.
Charlie Minor.
Charlie Minor.
A good old Georgia boy.
Yeah.
Who could, I mean, he never quit calling radio. He was a big boss. He was in Los Angeles. He had two Rolls Royces. But he would not even blink if I told him I needed him to call somebody in Brobridge, Louisiana.
Right.
Yeah, sure, I'll call him right now. So he never quit working. He was just an amazing, crazy man.
I've got a great Charlie Miners story. When I first got into radio, we went to this little convention called the Bobby Poe Convention. I don't know if you guys remember those or
course.
Not. But my very first convention, I was green. I was a music director there in Myrtle Beach, and I was with my PD, and I was scared and shy. And he was like, well, let me walk you around the room and introduce you to some people. So I was shaking hands with everybody. All of a sudden, Charlie Miner walks in the room, and everybody's like in just gasping because this amazing guy, Scott Shannon, who's the program director for Z100, the biggest station in America at the time, you know, is like, hey, Charlie, come over here. He's like, I got plenty of time to talk with you, Scott. I got to meet my new boy over here named Lloyd. And he came over there and talked to me and blew off Scott Shannon. I was like,
nice.
That guy is the man.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's the kind of guy he was, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he was great. In fact, after he died, this artist painted a picture of him. And I got a copy of it, and it's on my wall. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, wow. Where was that at, in Los Angeles?
I don't even remember who the artist was. But he paints a lot like Leroy Neiman.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And it's Charlie, and it inspires me every day. It really does.
So when I got in the music business in Detroit, I had to start from the warehouse on up, and I immediately gravitated to A&M Records because I just, for whatever reason, thought it was one of the coolest record labels out there. It wasn't ginormous like Warner Brothers or Columbia. It was a small boutique label, and all their artists, they grew, which meant they didn't go spend an enormous amount of money to buy a band that was already famous and it was already selling records.
Right.
They grew all of their artists from the ground up, and they had artists like Supertramp. They had artists like Joan Armatrading. They had artists like Chuck Mangione. And, and of course, Herb Alpert of Tijuana Brass was the very first album I think they came out on. But what happened when rock started to really come around in the 70s, they had signed Joe Jackson, and his album was called Look Sharp.
Yeah.
And then they signed The Police, and obviously Roxanne, which KLBJ-FM's been earmarked as one of the very first stations to actually play that song for The Police. Tell us a little about those bands, Patty.
Well, I when you mentioned Herb Alpert, and Herb Alpert, the A in A&M, and his partner was Jerry Moss. He was the A&R. Just two phenomenal people. Somebody I'm so proud to have worked for. But Joe Jackson was quirky. He was not the friendliest guy. But seeing him in concert, you just say, I'm not a fan. I wasn't a fan when I got here, but I sure am now. A&M just was such a, it was just an incubator for incredible talent. You know, The Police, by the time I got to A&M, The Police were well established. But you just had fun no matter what. It was just that kind of place. Charlie Miner's your boss. You know, the people that I met at A&M are still my friends today. I'll never let go of those relationships.
So let me ask you this. I mean, the Carpenters obviously sold a gazillion records for A&M, right? I mean, were they really maybe the top pop artists to kind of really get a lot of money coming into that company?
Well, yeah, but they also had Captain and Neil.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, they had bands.
Nazareth, Love Hurts.
Exactly.
Wow.
Hey, remember when we talked about Muskrat Love? Captain and Neil and the little muskrats.
I can imagine you getting that record for the first time and thinking about it. You got to go talk to the toughest program director on radio. It's like, hey, I got this Captain and Neil record called Muskrat Love. I need you to add. What do you think?
Well, actually, that was a little before my time, so I didn't have to work that record. But trust me when I tell you, I've worked plenty more embarrassing records.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, let's move over to MCA Records. Did you have an opportunity to work with The Who?
Well, yes and no. We had by the time I was with MCA in the late 70s, they had kind of lost a little bit of their luster. Mm. And actually, it was at the time referred to as the Music Cemetery of America.
Oh, wow. Music Cemetery of America. That's amazing.
MCA.
I've told people, you know, in fact, the lady that I work for now, when I got here, she was so jacked up about this guy that worked for our company who used to work for Warner Brothers. And she was blown away. He had been with Warner Brothers, the great label Warner Brothers. And I said, Tracy, let me explain something to you. When you were with Warner Brothers, you had the greatest artists, the greatest records coming at you every single day, and everybody wanted to play them.
Right.
I was with MCA. I had some of the crappiest records that have ever come out, and I had to be pretty good to get those things on the air.
Give me an example of one that was a tough sell, but it actually did okay.
Well, we had these weird records. We had, like, the Safety Dance, remember?
Men Without Hats.
Men Without Hats, right. Yeah. Now, who would have thought that?
That was a huge record, though.
For a minute.
It was huge.
But, I mean, you got to attribute that a little thing called MTV probably helped make that band a success, though, right?
Well, it did. It did. But we had some records, and Bubba Wayne, who I think you guys have talked to before, he and I were in a meeting one day, and they played this song by a guy named Baron Stewart, and we locked eyes like, what the hell are we going to do with this record? But at the time, KRBE was a big, big station here in Houston, and Dana Steele was the music director.
Yeah.
And one Tuesday, I got a call, and they said, man, you got KRBE on Baron Stewart. So I called Dana. I said, what? Why did you add Baron Stewart? She said, you were working it, and you said you needed it, so I did it.
Wow. Now, that's a great connection right there.
Well, I'll say.
How much did that dinner cost?
Believe me, I paid for it.
You know, I have to tell you, Lloyd, I put your name down so many times.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be ginormous if you ate all the food that wrote you down for.
I'm sure if I was at all those dinners, Fred, I would be weighing about 500 pounds
right
now.
You would be. So Patty and I got a chance to work together as locals when I moved to Houston.
Yeah.
And what I really enjoyed about the Houston group was that all the record label people were all friends. I mean, they all really got along pretty well. It was a really nice little community. And luckily, I just came in there and I was just mild-mannered and really didn't bother anybody and stayed to myself. Right, Patty?
Oh, yeah. Right, Fred.
And so it was a lot of fun.
It was. When you moved here, I moved the same month, and then two other guys moved the same month. So I feel like there were four of us.
Oh, Mark Niederhauser moved the same time, too. He came in from Missouri.
And Drew Murray.
Yep. Yeah.
And which is kind of bizarre, because I moved to Austin in 1995, and all these people that you mentioned were actually all my local reps that were promotion folks for
me. Do you have a Patty Martin story? Did she piss you off?
No, Patty's always been super cool to me, but I was just kind of curious if you had one favorite Houdini story there, Patty.
I got one.
All right, let me hear that one.
And if you ever take Lloyd out for any kind of function, don't let him go to the bathroom, because you'll never see him again.
I wonder what he was doing in there.
Master. I finally sent somebody up there to see if he was okay, and they go, nobody's in here, and it's like, God, this guy is amazing.
I would have parties at my condo sometimes when I was in San Antonio, and by the time it was ready, I was ready to get my Houdini mode going on. I would be like there chatting with everybody, and then I actually bought the Houdini book, and so I would kind of leave it there on the table, you know, inconspicuously, and then I'd sneak off and go to my room and hide and crash for the rest of the night. They'd be going like, hey, where's Lloyd at? And they looked at it and it's like, oh, he left the damn Houdini book here on the counter. good times.
The best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So what is your go-to story when you're hanging with people about one of the craziest experiences you had with a rock band?
Well, this was not crazy as far as the band being crazy, but it's one of those nights where you can't quite believe it just happened.
Oh, wow.
I've had a few
It was when AC/DC was on one of their tours, and we had the meet and greet before the band went on. And if you know anything about Angus Malcolm Young, the two main guys in AC/DC, they were brothers, and they were the tiniest little guys you ever met in your life. I mean, I towered above them, and I'm all of 5'4". But Fred may remember this guy. We had a programmer from Beaumont. His name was Cruiser. And he was a nice guy, big mountain man kind of guy, but a sweet, sweet guy. And before we did this, he said, "Patty, I really want to get a picture with Malcolm and Angus on each side of me. We can do this." And I said, "Sure, okay." So I got their tour manager standing over there, you know, making sure everything's going well. And I'm over there with my little camera, and I counted down, like, "Okay, you guys ready? 1, 2, and all of a sudden, Cruiser just does his arms down and picks up both of them. Their little legs are dangling in the air. And I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here?
Oh,
and the tour manager took like 2 steps, like coming over to rescue him, but the guy started laughing hysterically. And he gently put him back down. But I'm going, oh, my God, it's a good thing he didn't tell me what he had in mind.
That's a great story.
That could have been really, really ugly.
That's better than the guy who grabbed Taylor Swift's ass, I think, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
And, Patty, you know, obviously, you know Rod Tanner. So we had Rod on, and he told us, when I first started, my very first band was Van Halen. And he said when he started, his very first band was AC/DC.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
At that moment in time, I had Thin Lizzy, who were pretty big, and that was the tour that AC/DC was opening for them, at least in my region of Detroit,
Yeah. Before
I got down to Houston. But it's kind of funny how those bands back then are the premier iconic classic rock bands of today, and we were working those records to radio as brand new songs that no one had ever heard before.
Right.
Which I think is why this show has had so much success, I want to say.
You
or
can
at least,
say success.
Well, I mean, it's just people really love hearing these stories. And we got Chewy standing over here doing all the operations on the control board. And he's always smiling because I can tell he's like, man, I love these stories. This is like reliving it. It's great, you know.
So, Patty, we've taken a lot of people out to dinners. Which band or did you get the receipt and went, what? Because I used to get in trouble because my boss called me one time, John Bulos at Virgin. He goes, "Fred, grab an expense report." I said, "Okay, we're here in my desk." He said, "Do you have it in front of you?" I go, "Yeah." He said, "See all those little squares?" I go, "Yeah, I love those squares." He goes, "Yeah, obviously, you fill every single one in." He said, "Your expenses are more than anybody in the whole company." And I said, "Well, that's what I thought those empty squares were for."
Exactly.
So, which receipt, you know, made you choke?
Well, actually, this was not my dinner, but I was there, and I was in Detroit. And it was Sting when his first solo tour was going on.
Ooh. Oh, so it was Sting.
It was Sting. And I was up there visiting my girlfriend, Denise George, who we worked together for years. And I don't know if you remember a place up there. I think it was called the Whitney, maybe?
Don't remember. But anyway, that's the restaurant?
Anyway, it was a restaurant in this old, old building. It was very elegant, glamorous. We had a private room, and we were invited by the band to come to this dinner.
So that you could pay for it.
Well, when the bill came, their manager, Kim, said, give it to those ladies.
Oh,
and
wow.
We nearly had a stroke. We were just like, are you kidding? We had ordered, like...
salad.
Many bottles of wine. I mean, it was ridiculous. And the bill was like $12,000.
$12,000.
Sounds like somebody got stung by Sting there.
So
I mean, it was, and they all looked at us, and we were turning red and sweating, and finally Sting started laughing and said, bring it here. So we wound up not having to pay for it.
It was in Houston, and we had signed a band called Asia.
Oh, yeah.
And they were on Geffen, which was one of our labels at the time before they went on their own independent. And so it was in Houston and Asia, which is John Wenton from Yes, Carl Palmer from Emerson, Lake and Palmer. So it was a dinner with and we invited quite a few people. And I remember getting the bill, and I had to put it on my American Express, and it was like $2,500. And this is like, I don't know, 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's a big meal.
Which would have been like $12,000 today.
Right.
It's
right.
Like, what?
But this was with the road crew, the band, everybody. How could they expect us to get away with that?
I got a feeling that some strip clubs have probably had higher tabs than that from some of these promotion people across.
Yeah, true. Yeah, true that. Hey, Patty, so now you are still in the music business. What is it like today? Is Ad Day still Tuesdays?
Yeah.
And where's the charts?
It's very different.
Yeah, like just give us a little synopsis of like is there any charts that people follow and all that?
Well, sure. You know, there's the pop chart. And I'm really not in that world so much anymore. Mostly what I do is alternative and rock.
That a girl.
And
love that.
We are the staff for probably the, Lloyd, wouldn't you say the best rock label?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure. You got a lot of good stuff going on. You guys have broke some artists here in the last 10 years. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Definitely
been
a go-to
really
when I need to get artists on the show to interview. I'll call Patty. It's like, hey, I need this artist on my show, and she delivers every time.
Yeah, because the listeners need to know that Lloyd has this show that's over 20 years. It just celebrated your 20th anniversary, right?
Yep, it's a Rock 30 Countdown.
Yeah, Rock 30 Countdown on Sundays.
Yep, well, it's on all different times, all weekend, on about 45, 46 stations.
Yeah, nice. So it's all the current stuff that's going on in rock.
Right, right. And Patty is still doing that, you know, to this day, 41 years, I think you said, in your career. And I'm sure some people, like the Bubba Wayans you mentioned, are going like, in fact, I think I've even heard him say, it's like, I don't know how Patty still does it, man. She is just, you know, she's out there hustling. And
she's got dirt on everybody.
Right, well, that's true.
She can, kind of like Putin has on our president.
Something like that.
Same thing.
Well, you know what, it's funny because I've just been in the same place for so many years, and you run across everybody in that time, so... There are some programmers who will take my calls that won't take anybody else's calls, and it, you know, I'm perceived as being, man, she's connected. It's like, not really. I've just fed them a lot of meals, and I know their families, and they're, you know, it's not that I'm that great. I just outlasted everybody.
Guilty as charged.
Well, and what I have to say is Patty has more friends than anybody I know. Her contact list has got to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Thank goodness you don't send out Christmas cards. You'd still be filling them out as we speak in September.
That's Mark Niederhauser, Mr. Birthday.
Oh, that's true.
It is.
Well, Patty, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for coming on. Any stories you want to leave us with?
Oh, let's see. Nah, not really. You know what? Maybe we will do this again. I got a couple of more funnies, but they can wait.
Maybe we can get her on the radio show to drop a couple. If we got like a theme thing, we can get her back for that, maybe.
Yeah, and actually, do you mind me saying that on the way here to record this, we were given permission to interview John Anderson, who right. is the leader of Yes.
Yep.
So he's going to come on the radio show, and then they asked if we'd be willing to interview Greg Raleigh.
Right.
Because the same management company, and so we have those interviews coming up for the radio show.
That'd be great.
Which we'll make as podcasts as well, but... yeah, the show's really starting to get some momentum.
Yeah.
So, that's exciting, you guys.
Thank you.
Really done so well.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you for coming on, everybody. This is Patty Martin.
I'll see you soon, Patty.
Yes, you will.
And thanks again for calling in, hon.
Thank you.